Welcome to the Asia edition of Breaking Banks, the number one global fintech podcast. I'm Rachel Williamson.
And I'm Karis Palmer. Every fortnight, we dissect the successes and failures of financial innovators and bring you the people at the top of their field working to disrupt banking.
From traditional banks doing things differently to startups navigating the unforgiving world of financial services, I'm Simon Spencer, and this is Breaking Banks Asia.
Welcome to Breaking Banks Asia. I'm your host, Karis Palmer. Recently returned from Bangkok, where Rachel, Simon and myself crashed on Brett King's couch for the Money 2020 Asia conference. In today's show, we bring you some snippets from people with a really holistic view of what went down at the conference, the investment outlook for fintechs, and what's shifted in the last few years in terms of innovation and bank disruption. We kick off with Scarlett Sieber, Chief Strategy and Growth Officer at Money 2020, and then hear from Dennis Pratista, Chief Investment Officer with Mandiri Capital Indonesia. And then we round things off with a fireside chat between Simon and Startup Bootcamp fintech guru Tim Poskett. I hope you enjoy the show and please forgive the conference audio.
We are here at the close of Money 2020 Asia in Bangkok. I'm Rachel Williamson and I'm here with my co-host Simon Spencer. Have you had a good time?
I've had an amazing time. This has been a fabulous conference. Really enjoyed it. Love the layout, love the vibe, the feel, the mix. It's just a great conference.
So, Simon, you have been looking at startups and ecosystems.
What I was really struck by was, living in Australia, we probably have a different perspective a little bit on fintechs and the neobanks, which have struggled. But over here in Asia, you know, the rise of the super apps, the rise of various fintechs, I think is amazing. The interesting thing about it, though, is this creation of ecosystems and the integration of some of these platforms together. I think open banking has moved beyond open banking to become, how do I build those rails that I can innovate on top of? So, yes, there is the regulatory element of open banking to comply with, but I get the sense that actually organisations, whether it's Standard Chartered or HSBC or Citigroup, you know, they have actually gone sort of a step further and tried to lay down infrastructure that the fintechs are actually building on top of, which is really, really progressive of them.
I have been looking at investment flows and talking to a few people about investment here, and it's still pretty rough out there. I read a really interesting Richard Turin piece earlier this week which said investment's coming back. He's a China-based commentator, but everyone here is saying, from corporate VCs through VCs through to startups, it's just hard. What are you hearing from startup land here, Simon?
Look, it is hard, but I also see optimism. I see, you know, startups getting access to large customer markets and trialing things. I see some really interesting, innovative startups looking at financial inclusion, looking at the unbanked. I'm seeing them explore concepts which have been around for a while now, like gamification, but doing it in a much more sophisticated way, you know, creating those feedback loops, using gamification to drive behaviour and using gamification to drive literacy, you know, goal-based behaviours. So sort of a much more sophisticated use of these techniques integrated into some of these fintech apps. The other one thing which I saw, which is really interesting, is fintechs that are pre-positioning themselves for stablecoin and for CBDC, so central bank digital currencies. Those things are coming in some shape or form, and there's obviously big geopolitical questions around China, the US, Europe, and how that will play out. There's a number of fintechs that are conscious of that and laying down on-ramps and off-ramps that will work with stablecoins, that will work with fiat currencies, that will work with CBDCs. And so, I think they're getting access to customers, they're getting access to and they're growing. And I think it's just going to be really interesting.
Yeah, that investment crunch, the other side of the coin there is that you're seeing a lot of companies really making do with less and doing a really good job of it.
It's been a fantastic event. We had a great time here. Bangkok is such a vibrant city. We look forward to coming back again.
Coming back next year.
Absolutely. It's been great.
So we're here at Money 2020 Asia and we're with Scarlett Sieber, Chief Strategy and Growth Officer at Money 2020 and who has a pedigree in banking strategy. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Thank you for coming to Bangkok.
Ah, our pleasure. Now, I'd love to know what the key themes that you're seeing coming out of this conference are. I know you've got set themes for the conference, but, you know, what ideas and what themes are you seeing actually start to build and come through this?
Yeah, I think there's a few key things. So one of the things, our overarching theme for this show is around now and next. And I think open banking, obviously we partner with Banking Banks at all of our shows. You know, the concept of open banking is much more prolific in Europe or in the US, whereas in Asia, that conversation is just starting now, and we're really starting to get a bit of pickup there, which is really run by the, you know, regulation focus and regulation first. So we're starting to get a lot more conversations on that. I think one really nice example of that was starting the day yesterday with Dr. Durrani from the Bank of Thailand. It was the most packed session in the house and the most popular. And if I think back to when we were creating some of these sessions year on year at Money 2020 globally, people were saying they wanted the regulators, but then they weren't going to the sessions. And now they are the most packed sessions across the shows, which is always really exciting and a key area for us. And we have 5-6 plus regulators here. We had a closed door session with them yesterday. We got some great feedback from that. So I think that's a big thing. Cross-border payments being huge here in Asia. And then, of course, we can't be talking about, it's 2024, we can't not talk about AI. Obviously, it spans from the most generic use of AI to quite specific use cases of how people are thinking about it. And then the other really big thing that's happened, and we saw yesterday even with the press lunch, is this idea of partnership, which was one of the things that I think is really exciting about Asia. So the idea of partnership is not a new one, but I think one of the more interesting things that we're seeing is bank-on-bank partnerships. JP Morgan also talked about on one of the stages how they were partnering with HSBC and Standard Chartered to be their partner and custodian of choice for Hong Kong and Taiwan. So that is something that's quite new. And if we were sitting here 5-10 years ago, this was a far-off dream that wasn't happening and is becoming a reality now.
Forefront of every fintech's mind currently is, where do we get the money? The last 2 years has been pretty horrible for fundraising. What are you guys seeing?
So I think it depends. One of the nice things, if we take a step back and look about where the flow of money comes from and at what stage the flow of money happens, when money gets tighter, history has shown us that some of the most interesting companies come out of that because, A, people are laid off or whatever else, they want to go start their own thing. So the startup capital, the seed money, seems to be quite consistent. Is it as prolific as before? I mean, back in my career, before I was in fintech, when I had a data visualization platform, a bunch of angel investors and venture capitalists that I knew in the last 5 years started wanting to invest in fintech because fintech was the thing. And it's like AI or big data, like everyone's investing in fintech. However, I do think that there's been still a consistent pump, especially for that seed money. Where there has been a bit more of that drought is on the scale up. And getting to that $10, $15, $20 million is a lot harder. What has worked well is for where we settle, a lot of the businesses are the B2B, so they have to raise a bit more upfront and because they have the longer sales cycle. So it has impacted them, but it's probably been a little bit less impactful than the larger ecosystem that has much more B2C. So I would say we're somewhere in between. Earlier stage is okay. We're seeing a bit more money trickle in. We got a fair amount of VCs here, some of them corporate VCs, some of them, you know, angels, everything in between, some pension funds. So there's money here, but it's not certainly back to the early days.
Yeah, I've been chatting to a few people and they've been a little bit more cautious than they used to be, but still pretty optimistic. So yeah. Read into that what you will. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
With me today is Dennis Pratista, Chief Investment Officer of Mandiri Capital Indonesia. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you for having me.
I'm very happy you're here because I would love to get an understanding from you as to what investment is looking like for fintechs right now. The last 2 years have been difficult, is a kind way of putting it. But I understand things are changing, and changing quite quickly.
Yes, 2002, semester two, things sort of slowed down till 2003. It was a grinding halt. It's only started to pick up quarter four 2023, and right now it's recovering, but it's not there yet. But it won't be as aggressive as it was in 2020, because of interest rates. Interest rates are still sky high. Until that reduces, then of course you won't be able to see a huge bullish market like 2 years ago.
Extrapolating that sounds like it's still pretty tough.
Of course,
for
of course.
VCs out
of
there,
course, of course.
Therefore fintechs. We're obviously at Money 2020 Asia in Bangkok. We're at the very start of the conference right now. What are you expecting to get out of being here, and what are you looking forward to seeing?
Very good question. So, we're a strategic investor. We focus on investing in companies where we can help them grow their business, meaning we have initiatives. So we have a very formal framework for value creation, which revolves around three pillars. One is the business matchmaking. Essentially, the output of the business matchmaking is our MOUs, business exploration, business opportunities, right? But that doesn't derive revenue. We have the second pillar, which revolves around business acceleration. So once business opportunities are identified, we help founders navigate huge corporations to acquire the contracts, which generates revenues, right? And of course, the networking. Why we're here, of course, we want to expand beyond Indonesia. We're an Indonesian VC. That's why we have a presence in Southeast Asia. So we want to make sure that we can grow our value creation initiatives to Asia as well, Southeast Asia, as well as to Australia. So
just on the regional and global expansion, companies in Asia and investors in Asia are increasingly looking outside the region's borders, or outside their national borders and outside their regional borders. Are you starting to see these flows of IP and money outside this region, and what impact is that having?
What Southeast Asia has is a big market, right? Indonesia itself, we have 280 million population.
Enormous, yeah.
We're in Thailand, we have 70 million. As comparison, Australia is around, 22, 23 million in population, right? So, but what Australia has, of course, climate has been quite aggressive in Australia. Europe, very aggressive. So you guys have the technology. Whereas climate tech ecosystem in Indonesia, Southeast Asia is quite nascent. So bringing technologies, knowledge, research, and experience from Australia, from other developed nations, in Europe, for instance, over to where the market is in Southeast Asia, I mean, it's a win-win, right? And of course, we play a part in jumpstarting the ecosystem for climate tech in Indonesia and Southeast Asia, essentially, right?
Dennis, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so we're here at Money 2020. It's been a little while since we've caught up, but it's great to see Startup Bootcamp here. What are you seeing here? It's exciting here.
Yeah, great. Good to catch up again, Simon. It's the first time they've been in the conference in a couple of years post-COVID. So, look, there's a lot of interesting companies here. We've got 9 startups pitching their solutions. They're global. So we've had 9 companies pitching on stage. We've got 3 out of Australia, 1 from New Zealand, 2 in Africa, 1 in India, and 2 from Europe. So we've got 2 global startups. These are pre-seed, seed stage. I mean, there's a lot of businesses doing a lot around agri-tech, agri-finance. Our fund is focused around sustainable finance and sustainable fintech. So it's really about developing sustainable finance solutions. And why do we do that? I mean, ultimately, that's where we're seeing a huge amount of interest from the large banks. Thanks to large global banks, large partners, large private equity firms are also looking at sustainable finance in line with, you know, the World Bank, the UN sustainable goals. So our full fund and ethos is around that. So we've seen a lot about that. We're also, you know, at Money 2020, you've got some, you know, there's certainly less crypto and blockchain companies than there maybe a couple of years ago, but there's a huge amount of cross-border payments. That's still, you know, I think the talk of the town, cross-border payments, but I think, and also passion close to my heart, a lot around open data or open banking, and really about, you know, data sovereignty, and then overarching AI, which I was talking a bit about yesterday. And
It's really interesting, like open banking, the payments, and even the blockchain and crypto stuff. There's a bit of
been a bit of a sort of coalescing of some of these worlds, and now people are talking about, you know, payment rails and open APIs and people building ecosystems on top of all of this, you know, quite fast maturing technology infrastructure. So it's exciting to see, and it's exciting to see the fintechs leveraging this, and that's what's driving this explosive growth that we're seeing across Asia in fintech innovation. It's exciting.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, you know, we talk about banking in Australia and New Zealand, and we look at it globally. I think we've really got some work to go for full adoption of that. But, you know, if you meet a number of the banks here, what they're trying to do with some of their global APIs and what they're really trying to do. And I think, you know, if organizations and ultimately fintechs are using that effectively, they're going to build a lot of hyper-personalization, hyper-solutions for them by using that technology. And, you know, we talked a lot about AI yesterday in fintech, how that's being utilized. And ultimately, I mean, we're seeing, you know, a lot of good use cases, but I think it's still got work to go, I think, from, you know, fully live solutions that are live in market. But I mean, if you're not using AI, and you know, you're certainly lagging.
Yeah, you are indeed. The other thing I think is interesting is the role that some of the really big banks have in this market, building ecosystems. You know, Standard Chartered, HSBC, Citi to a slightly different extent. But these gigantic banks seem to be actively fostering and building ecosystems of fintechs who are quite independent in many cases. Are you finding that and when you're thinking about, you know, the investments you're making, are you looking at fintechs that are working well with the larger banks?
100%. I mean, we just met with two large global banks this morning. We've met their corporate venture capital arms, we've met their ecosystem, we've met their strategic investment team. So 100%. So some of the startups that we're investing in, we generally invest between 50 and 150 check size. We put them through our 3-month incubator. So Startup Bootcamp has a 12-month strong program, which is a well-oiled machine. We've invested into 200 businesses in APAC and over 2,000 businesses globally. So some of these companies are earlier on, and then we will also do a follow-on check and work with fellow funds that would invest into them. But also, you know, to be able to work with a global bank, a global partner, you know, it's not easy. And I think the times that it ultimately takes to be able to partner with a global bank, so I think being able to stomach that and digest that, I think it takes time. And we really try and help these guys get set up for success in the sense that they are then ready to partner with a bank if it's then maybe with a solution, and then also, you know, be able to go to market with that. So our role is really to help them bring them in the ecosystem. But some of the guys early are not really ready to work with a big bank. And if they do, it's going to, quite frankly, sink them. So maybe they may invest. They maybe do a, you know, strategic advisor, and that then helps them maybe cross-pollinate and maybe sell a product into the bank.
What's exciting you about what you're seeing over the next sort of 6 to 12 months?
Yeah, so I think, you know, Money 2020, certainly you've got the biggest and the brightest brains in the region in one room over 3 days. So it's great that it's definitely an electric event. It's got a huge buzz around it. And I think when we've gone from a world where fintech investment is tough, we've gone through a sort of a downturn to help organizations, you know, attract investment that's also not from a seed stage but also later on. I think being able to partner now with some of these larger players, I think, is what is helping some fintechs accelerate. So I think we're coming out now where it's all about profitability. It's all about, you know, when you're going to break even. The checks that were getting written 2 years ago are not the same, as we know. So I think now we're getting to a world where if you're developing a fintech and you can make it in this market and you can raise in this market and you're profitable, you know, you've really got a really huge platform to then go on when, you know, capital markets do ease up. You know, at the end of this year, we get a few more big, broader IPOs. You know, we expect, what, 2 or 3 big IPOs in fintech globally in H2. That will be a lot of liquidity to the market, a lot of secondary. We've also had a big one in Australia recently, so with the Canva's secondary market. So I think that is what's really exciting. And then, yeah, so it's been a great week. So.
Just last question, and, you know, you and I are both from Australia. I'm based in Sydney. And obviously, every time I come to Asia, I see a very different pace. And that's been happening for many years. What's the biggest thing that I think the Australian banks in particular need to start to think about when they are, you know, working with fintechs? You know, what are they getting right? What are they getting wrong? Or where do they need to probably put their time?
Yeah, great question. So that the banks in Australia are in a scenario where I compare it, I'm from the UK, you compare it, similar market where 4 largest banks have got over 80% of the retail market, same in the UK, 4 banks. So neobanks has really made some of the Australian banks stronger at parts. You've got to look at Commonwealth Bank, their technology, their arm is very good, X15, fantastic, you know, what they're investing into and some of their growth. But in terms of some of the Asian banks, you know, I think they do have a larger ecosystem, and we talked before about their ecosystem partners, is it through their venture arm, is it through their startup hub, is it through their co-investing, ultimately to be able to partner with a larger financial services organization. And I think, you know, we've seen some, you know, in Australia, the Reinventure Fund is now closed, they're now taking on new investors. You've got CBA leading the way, I think, at X15. And then, you know, you've got ANZI and, yep. and you've got NAB Ventures. So I think that they're going, they're probably not investing and not as active as they were a few years back, is my view.
They're sort of going it alone a little bit?
A little bit, yeah. But I think, you know, if you look at some of the DBSs, Standard Charters, or, you know, their ecosystem partners, it is feels much more
they're
comprehensive.
Dynamic. They're explosive.
Yeah, then they're doing a lot with, you know, you've only got to look around the room here. We've got, you know, payments company, you know, various other, you know, businesses that they're probably leading the way. How many banks from Australia can you see in this room?
None.
Exactly. You know, which I think is probably a bit of a telling message. So, yep. So why are they not here? You know, this is not a, this is an APAC conference. So, you know, why are the big four not here? I don't know, but I think that probably is quite telling. And I think you don't want them to be complacent, and we don't want that. But I think we need to see more innovation around in the neobanking space. And we've got some good examples of neobanks, but, you know, it's a tough business model to capture, and I think that's probably, if anything, made a few of the incumbents a little more complacent.
If you enjoyed today's episode of Breaking Banks Asia, don't forget to share it on Twitter, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you listen to our show. This helps us build our audience and support our sponsors so we can continue to bring you a great show every fortnight.